When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello. So what a week. Notable for many different reasons, from the split in captaincy, which is brilliantly delightful for many, but horribly brutal for the minority. Guess which one I am. We come back together to discuss what we do now, effectively, as we enter the Salah meta. We are Who Got the Assist. I'm Tom at WGTA underscore FPL. My co-host, who's back this week, is Anthony at FPL Stag. The lead code is 2IP43T. And we're also on video. You'll never replace the audio, of course. And we'll say this every week. But if you do want to see us instead of watch us, you can find us on YouTube. Now, this week, you'll see that we've got a guest. We're joined by a wizened silver fox, in fact, in the guise of a lovely man that is FPL Matthew at FPL Matthew on Twitter, one of the best FPL managers in the business, actually. Thanks for joining us today, Matthew.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Stag. Nice to be here.
Thanks very much for coming on, Matthew. It's great to have you, and it's good to be back myself as well. Unfortunately, with sound that isn't quite as good as I'm used to, I'm still down home at the moment, so I'm far away from my microphone, which is in Dublin. But anyway, we'll get on with the actual show itself. With Game Week 9, it was a week of very fine margins. Of course, with the captaincy especially, that was apparent. But it was also the case with a few midfielders too. We'll be leaning on Matthew's experience here in the upper ranks. He's had 3 top 500 ranks and 8 top 10K ranks. So plenty of expertise to lean on in the upper ranks to maybe refine our thinking about how to stop these tragicomedy game weeks hitting us. Both myself and Tom have had one each so far this very short season. So hopefully Matthew will be able to help us through that and help Tom through this, what is going to be akin to a therapy session. We had Matthew booked for weeks ago, though. So this wasn't just Tom drafting in somebody to help him through this. We're going to kick off that therapy session straight away with the game week reviews. And I believe that the first of us, because we tend to go in order of success, is Matthew.
Yeah, so it was a good week for me and a continuation of a good start to the season, unlike last season. So 104 points. When the Chelsea game finished, you know, being 7-0, and my Chelsea coverage was the Christensen, who didn't even play. I had feared for my rank, to be honest. But then Phil Foden exploded, so that was good. I brought him in the week before. Antonio added to it, and then and Livramento scored, obviously, who was in my team. And then obviously Salah captain at the end, and with Alexander Arnold. The only downside, I suppose, is I've got Dennis there with his 12 points on the bench, whereas Saar with his not blank in my team. But I was never going to play Dennis, so I can't really sort of think, you know, I was unlucky there.
Yeah, it's a really good week, Matthew. Like, it's where are you at now overall, just to give people an idea of how you're doing?
Just inside the top 25K, which is, I think, is, you know, it's possibly one of the best seasons I've probably had at this point of the season.
It's pretty fantastic. Yeah, you're well set up. You're really, really well set up there.
Last season, I was probably about 4 million at this point. So it's a completely different experience this time.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we'll move things on to my one there, Tom. And I think what you'll basically see is that I had a week which could, you know, quite conceivably have been like Matthew's, only that I was kind of missing that next big score. So I did have the Salah captaincy. I did have Rudiger and Livramento at the back. And then, you see, this is kind of where mine gets a little bit complex. My 89 points came thanks with a -8 included, so 81 points in total. I'd sold Lukaku, Werner and Benrahma. So I brought in Werner for the previous game week to join Lukaku, kind of basically targeting the Norwich fixture. Then when they were both injured, I think I got a little bit annoyed and petulant, if I'll be honest with you. And I just got rid of both of them and decided not to bring another Chelsea player in, even though I had seen the Havertz stuff online, even though I wasn't on the pod last week. I was a bit ill. I didn't really like Havertz as an option. I did like Mount as an option in a tweet that I had that did, you know, was seen by many. But at the same time, I didn't follow my own advice on that purely because I felt at most Mount might get 2 returns, and 2 returns coming in the form of goals felt, you know, unlikely for him. What I did was I ended up going chasing the higher returns, and I really expected the United game to be a bloodbath. I already had Salah, and I decided to get Mane in to join him.
Unlucky.
And yeah, the thought was correct, at least there. Now, I'm a tad annoyed with myself that really what my plan had been to do was to get Alexander-Arnold in sooner rather than later, and I didn't make any defensive transfers. Instead, I went off, kind of focused my transfers forward because of those two Chelsea players I was selling, and Benrahma, who also went as well. Brought in Gabriel Jesus because I wanted to get something into that City attack, even though the likes of Foden, I wouldn't necessarily say Foden just, but you know, the likes of Foden were definitely enticing, but I didn't decide to go for it. I was like, Jesus at least kind of seems like he's more solidly in that team in terms of expected minutes. I'll go for him. He has a decently high ceiling for his price, whatever. And I wanted to get Tony in because I kind of felt like that was a problem I was going to have versus the template sooner rather than later, with Brentford's fixtures continuing to be quite good. But overall, it's just, I feel like I maybe should have trusted the kind of the process that I was moving towards a little bit and got in TAA. That's the real regret here. Not so much the Mount stuff, not so much, you know, not getting in a Foden type character. I'm kind of getting into the woulda, coulda, shoulda zone too much with those. But it did mean that even though I had Salah captained, I actually ended up with like a very small red arrow. So 570 points now gives me an OR of 796K. I think I dropped something like 20 or 30K. So, you know, it's a difference of 1 point. But I guess it just shows you that I need that little bit more in my side. And I don't think I've made transfers that have set me up all that well. For example, like Saka is becoming a very frustrating hold in my midfield. Rafinha is now injured just ahead of this Norwich game. I hope he makes it through to it. He doesn't feel like a great hold. Now I'm looking at Gabriel Jesus and it's kind of like, oh, that's just a problem. And of course, Mane is a bit of a problem too, but I was bringing him in as a punt, but I didn't expect to have this many other quote unquote problems in my team. I feel like I've just compounded a few bad decisions with even worse decisions ahead of this game week, and I think that's going to cost me down the line again. But I kind of feel a bit bad to be kind of crying about my scores, because we're moving on to Tom, and this is a slightly different zone.
Yeah, I just felt so bad for you down there in the 800k sort of mark that I thought I could just come and join you, Anthony. That's what I thought I'd do this week, just in a display of comradeship. No, it was really bad, really, really bad. Get this out of the way. 58 minus 4, basically a massive negative swing from getting Havertz in and captioning him. I got him and Vardy. Vardy went off half-time injured, and Havertz himself was hooked with no involvement in any of 7 Chelsea's goals. It's a proper gut punch, to be honest. Like, it's very, very rare that I'm emotionally impacted by fantasy football. Really rare. Like, mostly, it's just fantasy football. But, you know, this one was really tough to take, actually. I just had to disappear off Twitter and stuff over the weekend and just absorb it. I've still kind of getting there, but yeah, it was not fun to watch, obviously. Why did I do it? Well, objectives were really combining, but I guess the Lukaku injury really made me think, well, Havertz is going to be Chelsea's number 9 and the Norwich game is the game to target. I was obviously right to target that game, but the outcome didn't happen, disastrously so. What I'm absorbing, I guess, is the ridiculous outcome that he was the only player, basically, to not get any returns in that game. The only player. Even Ruben Loftus-Cheek got an assist off the bench. So, I mean, that is ridiculous bad luck on a kind of a zoomed out level, no matter how much I can be accused of throwing salt around. If you watch the game, he was absolutely diabolical, Havertz, but hey, and I was not helped by being out for it. Like, it's one thing being in your own home, like just having a terrible time, but I was out with Simon at FPO Analytic, who has the emotional range of a biscuit. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that, but yeah, he was no help at all. He was basically kicking me in the balls as I was on the floor, and Nima, who tried to chew me up a bit, but yeah, it's really tough dealing with that with people around you. Literally this week, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, really. I think it's just a decision that was viable, but the extent of that downside is just so harrowing. Like, it started off with a double Chelsea no-show. I've had Christensen, and like you, Matthew, and I had Azpilicueta. Neither of them showed up. And like, there was kind of a cascade effect, effectively, of that move bringing in Havertz meant that I didn't captain Salah. It also meant that I didn't get Dennis off the bench for his 12 points.
Oh, you got Dennis then as well. Oh.
Yeah, so he would have come in for me if I hadn't have made the move for Havertz. And it's just so gutting, like the sliding door world where I'm sat here with a 100K rank rise because I didn't get sucked into Havertz, or a parallel world indeed where Havertz was involved in 2 or 3 of those goals. It's just so close. And that would mean the Salah hat-trick wasn't so bad. I guess unlike most people, I also have to do a podcast on this where last week I pretty much did say, well, Salah's a pretty decent captain, but at least I've got the algo thing to kind of drop back on. But yeah, a 250% rank drop, 250K would have been nice, 250% rank drop. I think every year I have a game week where it all kind of feels like it will get away from me. I think Anthony's was in game week 3. And what's really galling is just that, you know, the extent of the drop back. I mean, I think those are points I'm never going to make back on the likes of Matthew and co. So
I had a 1,000% rank drop, Tom.
Yeah. But I mean, those are points that you're not really going to make back, really. That's what's really depressing about it. So,
you know, habits. They've still got another two nice fixtures.
Yeah, I know, but I've lost all those points on you already. Like, there's no coming back from it, really. Like, they say you can't win FPL in the game week, but you can definitely lose it. I just don't think there's any kind of real prospects of a ridiculously high finish. I think there's a prospect of a decent finish, but it's a shame because it was a kind of steady upward progress, and now it's been.
It's mad, isn't it? How one really, you know, bad game week can like set you back so much. You know, it could take 10 weeks to make that back. I don't want to depress you anymore, but
yeah.
Fine margins, as you say.
I know. Well, at least that kind of feeds nicely in just a bit into our discussion this week. But yeah, no, really depressing stuff. Objectives, Anthony. I certainly did, but did you stick to them this week?
Yes, I believe I did. So I did captain with the herd of the algorithms. You know, Salah was the main captain, I guess, this week, and I certainly went with that. And I did that one. One of my objectives was to not be afraid to transfer out elite players if I felt they've dropped off. And I missed, obviously, last week's pod, unfortunately. But in those 2 weeks, I have transferred out both Lukaku and Ronaldo. Of course, one of those was due to injury, so you could say that was a bit forced. But at the same time, I'm certainly managing to transfer out my elite players if I feel they've dropped out, because I'm now down to just one premium player, having been very much on the threemium and hoping it would work out for me. In terms of timing, don't make transfers late on a Friday night or early on a Saturday morning. I didn't do that this time around. I think I made the transfers on the Friday afternoon, but it was a Friday deadline. I don't consider that late in this sense, in that I was just waiting to get the press conferences over with and things, but I did it that way. And then in terms of play style, I've set a max 10 hits in total, and I think now, having gone through the first 5 games without touching a single hit, now I'm just starting to like reef through them as kind of frustration starts to mount. So now I've got 3 hits taken so far, so suddenly I've kind of gone through what you would have expected to be my quota for the first kind of quarter to third of the season. Yeah. So it's a bit concerning because I kind of want to take more.
Yeah, very more, aren't they, as you slip down the table. So my objectives this week actually clearly contributed to the outcome, just because one, captaincy, do what Mikel's captain algorithm tells us to do every week. Well, he did pick Havertz. I did have Salah, of course, as well. But number two, in transfers in the 50-50 situation, take the hit. So last year, I did really well from taking those kind of risky moves, or at least kind of just taking the hit in the move, or otherwise you'd have just left it. So as part of the 50-50, obviously that was bringing in Havertz. Captaincy, because Havertz was top of the list, then he became the captain. And who I was removing Lukaku for, number three, take a chance on four, and buying bandwagoning players. Well, I mean, Vardy got a 0.2 million price rise within 2 days. Like, that's a bandwagoning player who was in form. Like, he hadn't blanked for absolutely ages. And of course, then went off. And another thing I just heard the other day was that Brendan Rodgers said that Vardy had felt something in the warm-up, so he probably shouldn't have played. So, oh, they got Dennis off the bench. If Vardy hadn't played, even more lols, just to compound what a horrendous week it was. But I mean, it's just a rare example of the perfect storm of all of the objectives lining up to make the moves obvious. Do I kind of do hashtag trust the process, or do I rethink these? I think I'm going to hashtag trust the process. Maybe it's some cause fallacy, but I mean, one bad outcome does not a season make or not make. So hopefully these will all steer me in the right direction rather than wrong. going forward. I suspect that's probably the last week until AFCON that the captaincy, for example, will cause a conflict and make things change. But it'd be interesting to see what the hell happens after this with the likes of all those injured players who are coming onto the horizon for many of us after that game week. And finally, Matthew, I mean, obviously you've got a long and storied history in the game without blowing smoke up your backside. But do you have any kind of objectives that you tend to follow in general? Like, I know you're quite a patient manager.
The main thing I try and do is like just keep things simple. Because I just think FPL is a simple game at its core, isn't it? You get, you know, one free transfer a week. You can do another one or two if you want. Pick 11 players in your bench and pick a captain. You know, it's a lot more. The scoring system is quite simple. It's a lot simpler than Sky game, for example. It's a simple game. Just try and keep it simple. FPL feels a lot simpler when you're doing well. Somehow, you know, if you're doing well, it seems to feel a lot.
You get on form, or at least you get in a rhythm, don't you? And you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm pretty sure this is going to work out. You know, you don't doubt yourself, right?
Yeah, but if you're doing bad, then you're sort of trying to chase it a bit more, and then it just goes worse sometimes.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, last year, you mentioned earlier on that you were at 4 million overall rank. I remember
After seven game weeks.
And I remember reading your kind of end of season sort of reflections. I can't remember whether it was in the group or in one of your articles. And you said, you know, all I did was just play how I knew, and I didn't do anything else. I didn't alter my behavior. Like, is that kind of thing, that patience, is that something that kind of just is a thin red line that goes through all seasons?
Yeah, last season, I think, yeah, like you said, about 7 or 8 game weeks in, I was like doing terribly. And it wasn't just that I was 4 million overall rank, because you think, well, it's early days kind of thing. But when I looked at other people in our hub contributor league who were at the top, they were like 100 points ahead of me. So I was already like, you know, 100 points behind people that I should be trying to compete with. I think at that point, I just thought, well, I can either try and, you know, become late riser and like play, you know, a lot more of a punchy game. But I just thought, it's just not my game. I'll probably just end up getting even worse and worse. So I just thought, I'll just try and play exactly the same way as I normally do and just see where it takes me. You know, if I end up a millionth, so be it. But I ended up, I think, 28,000, 29,000, was it?
Yeah, more than respectable by anyone's standards. But yeah, no, interesting. I suppose we'll get into that as well in a little bit in terms of the fine margin and stuff about, you know, lessons from that season and how you kind of kept it all together. Let's move on to the Mini League update. And obviously it was a seismic week in the Mini League. There's no getting around it. Obviously there were massive scores everywhere. And from my count, only 2 members of the previous top 10 retained their spots. And there's someone new on top though. It's Stephen Hamilton, Pep's bald. Yes, he is. From 143rd all the way up to first with a massive 131 points this game week. In second as well, Bantu Sai Oxymoron, Paola FC, 119 points, up from 46th to second. In third, it's Robert Bob, up from 80th to third, so 122 points this week. All of this means that Ryan Quinn, who has been our erstwhile leader for quite a long time, so he took command state this week, actually. He brought in Son, Havertz and Jimenez. He only got 95, only in inverted commas, goes down from fourth to first. In fifth, Sean McGarry, he's up from 99th all the way up to fifth. Wow, 125 points he got again, Captain Salah, obviously. As did Stuart Heaton, from 153rd up to joint fifth with Sean. Wow, that's quite a jump, isn't it? It was one of those weeks. In seventh, up from 82nd, it's Dean Simmons, Salad for Dean, 117 points for Dean this week. In eighth, staying as they were, Worldwide Fantasy Club, 101 points, Captain Antonio this week. So one of the rare ones didn't captain Salah. And in joint ninth, and more jumpers, Joseph Alvarez, 113 points, V for Valaza, and Anthony Roberts, Rafinha Galada, who got 118 points and is in ninth, i.e. in the top 10, from 116th. So a week of massive movements and shakes. Speaking of movers and shakers, let's move on to the market for Anthony. What's been going on as a result of that tumultuous game week?
It's funny. I think what we're really seeing in the market forces is a lot of reactions to what we saw in the previous game week more than anything. Certainly, it doesn't strike me as... strike me as a week where people are forward planning or anything like it. I guess what's interesting, if we just take this in isolation, though, is that the Chelsea team that we've been watching for the last few weeks, we obviously would have, you would expect the likes of Lukaku to have been their primary scorers. But what we found is that anyone in their, well, let's say 10 outfield players are as likely to score as anyone else, it's felt like. And maybe this game week really kind of showed that yet again. Mount obviously chipping in with 3 and Chilwell getting another as well. And that's continuing a fine run of scoring for Chilwell himself. So it's both Mount and Chilwell are the most transferred in players, pretty much as a response of that, response to that. Mount 340k transfers in, Chilwell 295k transfers in. They're followed up by Phil Foden, 270k transfers in, 2 goals there, of course. Mo Salah, people are still getting him into their sides, about 185k transfers in. Emile Smith-Rowe, 175k transfers in, so people starting to get him into their sides, as of course he had another haul at the weekend. Jamie Vardy and Heechan Hwang round out the most transferred in players. Vardy, 165k, and Hwang, it's 145k. In terms of transfers out, we're seeing Lukaku being the most sold player, about 325k transfers out. He's followed by Marcus Alonso, 280k transfers out. So we have 2 Chelsea players as the most transferred in and 2 Chelsea players as the most transferred out. Pogba, 215k transfers out. Ronaldo, 185k transfers out. And Bruno Fernandes, 125k transfers out. So 3 Manchester United players then following up the 2 Chelsea players being sold. Then the only other players with over 100k transfers out right now, Rafinha, Benrahma, Doucouré and Vardy, who, of course, picked up that injury. So in spite of being one of the most transferred in, he's also kind of in and amongst the most transferred out players. So I think if you were to really try and deduce what's going on here, you'll see that there's probably an awful lot of Alonso to Chilwell moves, given that Chilwell's the only defender really featuring in that most transferred in, and Alonso is obviously the second most transferred out. And then what we're seeing is an awful lot of the upper mid premiums coming in. So that's your Mounts, your Fodens coming in. And then we're seeing elite forwards being the primary sacrifice. Lukaku, of course, mostly, but Ronaldo too. Hwang being the clearest alternative to those forwards, with people starting to move their money into midfield again. Kind of the period where people might have had 2 elite forwards and then big at the back is starting to change. And maybe we're moving towards a more classic FPL format where people have quite a bit of money in their midfields as well.
Lots of money sloshing around. Right, let's take a break there. Move on to the main topic just after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and we're into the main topic now. And I think it's actually a bit of an interesting one. It is, why are fine margins important in FPL? The importance of fine margins. We were thinking, let's delve more deeply into the effects of that kind of Salah meta. We touched on this last week with me and when Karen was on, when Anthony wasn't around. But we were thinking about, should you captain Salah all the time? Probably yes. So I guess that makes us need to touch on things like squad building and I guess maintenance advice as we seek to eke out those fine margins, which can make all the difference. As I said earlier on, nobody wants to be in this sort of weird netherworld I find myself in, where I feel like I've been staggered by a few punches. Like, no one wants to be sitting feeling like I am. We all want those fine margins to move our way. But anyway, yeah, why are the fine margins of FPL so important? It's kind of an obviously answered question. But with this one, I think it's more about the journey rather than the obvious destination, which is that, yeah, they pretty much are everything. That's especially true, as just inferred, now that Salah is the captain to everybody. That kills off captaincy as the premier way to recover points from here until AFCON, I think, lest those fire starters with cojones to go outside that kind of Salah orthodoxy we see. Those gains can get narrower, finer, and probably they're going to be all about managerial skill. And of course, Matthew's here. And who better to natter about this kind of thing, give strategic advice than a manager like Matthew, that brilliant record using our usual fishing analogy. We're not giving you a fish here, but instead we're consulting a fishing rod expert to refine our rods so we're able to catch better fish going forward. I'm saying rod too much. Let's move on. Starting with Matthew, I mean, now that we're in this sort of strange scenario where we've got one player who's going to be the discernible captain going forward, what sort of player do you think will be the most important sort of player now? Where will the gains be seen?
Well, the first thing that springs to mind when you say that is, if you know, if we are sort of agreed that, you know, we can captain Salah every week, then, you know, does that point more towards sort of spreading the rest of your money around the squad and just, you know, getting the best, you know, value options you can all over the pitch? because, you know, if that's the case, you don't need another premium. You know, normally there'll be, you know, you'll want a couple of premium slots because there's other ones you want to like take in and out. But if, you know, you could just decide, no, I just want Salah, it almost like going from like the freemium thing of a few weeks ago. So now can you say that you just need one premium, and, you know, that, you know, then you just get, you know, the best players and don't try and fit in another premium. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that?
This was definitely the primary thing that stuck out to me when I was thinking about this particular question. Like the threemium, it had one good week in the end. It's definitely in the gutter.
In
the gutter, perhaps even worse than that. The duomium, if we were to call it that, it's imperiled massively. Obviously, the Lukaku injury is part of that. We'd have definitely seen the duomium being the default right now had Lukaku not picked up his injury when he did. But certainly Cristiano Ronaldo, as it stands, is not going to be tempting people. So it's amazing how quickly that's changed. So yeah, we're kind of moving towards the monomium.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're just literally just having a monolithic premium.
I think is the way you put it before.
Or just the monolithic Salah in midfield. And that kind of just makes things pretty easy for us to go from there. So I think, Matthew, I would be in kind of agreement with you that it does seem like spreading money around the team. And it's not just about big at the back now, though. I think what we're starting to see more and more in these last few weeks is that those mid and upper mid price midfielders are coming into things a little bit more. Foden, for example, is one of those. His expected minutes has now ticked up nicely. Just last five game weeks, he's pretty much started all the time, and which is really helpful for him. And then the likes of Son has been ticking away nicely in terms of points over the last few weeks. Mount, obviously, this week is kind of a success story, but I'm not sure if any of us would necessarily be pointed to Mount as like a continued, you know, source of points in that Chelsea midfield. I think it could be just as easily anyone else there in the following weeks if we find that we're still without Werner and Lukaku for an extended period. So it does seem to me that, okay, yeah, big at the back is part of this. And then a few midfielders from those decent, strong teams, City, I think, being the one that I would first land on, are going to be the way to go. And then we will see that, you know, the marginal returns that you can get from your third and second strikers. So, okay, it could be Antonio, could be the likes of Huang, could be the likes of even Dennis coming in from the bench. I think they're going to kind of prove the differential in this. So just, I had like just a look at some stats from the last five game weeks, and just the most basic of all stats, FPL points. And okay, last five game weeks, Salah sticking out like a mile away ahead of everyone. 69 points in the last five game weeks. It's truly absurd. Then we've got, beyond that, it's Vardy, Chilwell, Foden, Smith-Rowe, Tielemans, Martinez, King and Son. They are the only other players to have got more than 30, and they've all got between 30 and 36 points. So we're starting to see that like this. Yeah, Salah is part of this. He's up and ahead. And if people kind of had copped onto the idea that captaining Salah every week was the way to go, I think everyone has been burned probably on this at some point by not captaining Salah this season alone. But beyond that, it is really marginal just getting that little bit more, because there's so many players have got 20-ish or 25 points in the last few weeks. So it's getting that extra 10 points from the odd player like Chilwell over versus some other Chelsea defender, or having Foden instead of a Ferran Torres type character, or whoever else you might have had in that bracket, Diogo Jota, for example. That's where you're going to get those extra points at the moment, it seems.
I think you're both right. I think it is about kind of those extra characters around the peripheries who are going to be coming on to make all the difference. I mean, your Livramento sort of types, right, who come on with like the odd 5-6 pointer here and there when you need them. I think this kind of feeds into a nice idea I want to just introduce here, which is the idea of squad maintenance. I'm just coining this phrase really because I feel more and more with Salah just the auto pick. I think that our squads are just kind of like a well-oiled machine sort of now, with lots of spare cash going. As we said in the market forces, that a lot of the expensive players are being binned off. People are going to be doing this week, you know, Vardy's still is actually injured. People are going to be doing Vardy to Tony, for example. And I'm seeing more and more our squads as being this well-oiled machine with loads of cash going in this sort of union or monium or whatever you want to call it context. And that becomes more about to bring in that kind of maintenance idea, discarding parts which aren't working anymore and buying new ones to function to keep your job going with the captaincy pretty much settled. I guess this breaks down into what I said about last week as well. The emphasis is on removing and discarding those old parts when they've outlived the usefulness and picking up the new ones properly and in a timely manner. So it's a little bit, it is a lot like maintenance, I think, rather than being about kind of surgery as we've used to do in the past, because you can have loads of money now, especially if, as mentioned earlier, people aren't going to be kind of sat there with two premiums. You can be sat there with a Son as being your second most expensive player. I guess what I'm getting at is that we're now in a situation with the little guys are where the fine margins are made. And the less glamorous picks, I suppose, reign supreme. In terms of those sorts of players, I mean, Matthew, what kind of works as being criteria for the sort of player you'd be looking to target? Who, you know, you're going to give, as a patient manager, you'll probably give them, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. Like, what sort of things are you looking for from an individual you'd be looking to buy in?
I do like my squad maintenance, and like as the season sort of starts up, I'm always trying to like get in players that you know, sort of solid picks that I can keep for the foreseeable future. You know, plug them in, and then once you've got you know, built a solid foundation, sort of a kicking on from your you know, engineering type of vernacular there, you know, once you've got a sort of solid base and, you know, maybe your bench is half decent, I think that then that starts allowing you to pick one or two more high risk but high upside type picks. So the likes of the Chelsea fullbacks or Foden or Jota, you know, so because you sort of tend to find that a lot of the, apart from the premiums, you know, are expensive for a reason, the ones that are kind of capable of those big hauls tend to be ones that also come with risk for whatever reason, you know, the likes of Foden and Jota. So, you know, you've got to have that solid squad so that you can just add those in as like you sort of risk, and you know you can fall back on your squad if needed. You know, the other players are just sort of ticking along.
It does seem though that those marginal players are where it's at, and I was trying to maybe thinking about this and maybe thinking a little bit proactively in terms of squad maintenance and trying to look at fixtures to come and where we might be able to find some sort of maybe less glamorous but still useful pick within the weeds, and maybe looking first of all to these like very close upcoming fixtures, like the three teams that are being identified as having the best fixtures of all are Norwich, so we can ignore that, Brentford, who I think we can take something from, and that, you know, of course Tony is going to be a primary pick for a lot of people. Then there is obviously Mbeumo, who had a bit of an injury, and so we're kind of waiting to see what's the story with that. And then there's that Brentford defense that some people are well invested in, and rightly so, and has proved so good for them and may continue to do so. Beyond that, then, you know, it's Wolves, Villa, Southampton, and then it's City, Liverpool and Chelsea, who have good fixtures coming up. And so I kind of feel like, okay, the City, Liverpool and Chelsea stuff doesn't help us because we're quite well invested. And so it's quite interesting that it could be the real point of a difference, for example, in the forward line could be, you know, Brocha versus the likes of Hwang. Who does better in these next 3 weeks? You know, as your third striker, for example, maybe looking further ahead, Spurs, actually, their fixtures are really starting to turn, especially from, well, broadly game week 12, although you could argue that the United game at home is a big opportunity for them and Nuno to get going. And so maybe getting Son in as that second most expensive player in your side may well start to look very enticing soon, and maybe he could provide the explosive returns that could find people finding a way to proactively sort out their squad to really fire up the ranks in a way that very few players can provide that opportunity. The thing is like, would you want to buy into that Spurs team at the moment, having looked so flat so frequently so far this season?
Yeah, that's the concern, isn't it, with those sort of players? Like, you're doing it with the marked upside. The thing is the ownership for so many players within this sort of maintenance sphere, so many players that Matthew kind of characterised as being solid, is just so high that if you do go against the grain, I'm saying last year as well, quite a lot for those who listened for a while, that if you bet against the house, a lot of the time you tend to lose. And there's a reason why these players' differentials, like very few will make the upward curve all the way into the mainstream. I mean, Matthew, I was interested to kind of hear about the fact that you've got your kind of risky picks on the basis of those solid picks. Like, what sort of distribution would you go with? Like, would you be saying that there's what sort of number of kind of solid picks would be going for, and how many risky picks would be kind of part of it? Would it be kind of two or three in the 11? Like,
you know, you want to be in a position where you've got mainly solid picks, and probably, yeah, two or three, sort of high upside, you know, high risk, but a little bit higher risk. I mean, Cancelo, I sort of had in that bracket, but he just seems to be become more reliable in terms of starts. I know he famous last words because he won't start all the time. But,
I was just about to say, I was like, you've done it now.
you know, your real solid picks, you know, the likes of, well, Livramento probably for the value. You know, I've got White, he's sort of okay. Alexander Arnold, pretty much everyone's got Salah, obviously. Rafinha, although they say that, but then he keeps getting injured or going to Brazil. and you know, Sar, like I thought, he was another solid pick. But then, you know, the solid picks can quite quickly become a bit stale sometimes. You know, a new manager coming in and, you know, maybe got a bit of a different role and he get, you know, got taken off after an hour, didn't he? And then before they scored four goals. So, yeah, so things can change quite quick. Quite often it seems like your kind of moves are kind of dictated by who's got injured or suspended, you know, rather than, you know, it seems quite rare in FPL that you can really just choose who you're going to address next.
Well, I mean, that's it, I think. I think there's definitely this sort of reactive versus proactive dynamic where a lot of the time, you are kind of happy to just leave your team be and then wait for an issue to arise.
Yeah.
But I guess kind of, you know, you've referenced this as well by saying, you know, players can get a bit stale. Like, there is, I think, opportunity in removing players like Bemarama, or for me this week, hey, you know what, it didn't really work out, but removing a player like Trossard to get in a player like Havertz to hope that he will then be a difference. Like, if I remove the name Havertz and said I bought in Mount for Trossard, then, you know, I'd be laughing right now. I think it's just one of those sort of things where there is definitely an opportunity in removing a high-owned player to get a low-owned one in when the fixtures, as Stag was kind of mentioning earlier on, do sort of align for you. I mean, Anthony, proactive versus reactive in terms of maintaining your squad. I mean, are you the sort of person who waits around for things to screw up, or are you somebody who's proactively maintaining, getting your spanner out and making sure everything's ship shape?
This maybe is going to highlight what might be part of our conclusion for this, that everything is so squad dependent, but I feel like I'm still paying the cost of that disastrous wildcard in game week 3, which just continues to cause me trouble. Like, I still haven't got TA into my side, and that's something that is a problem that I must respond to reactively at some point relatively soon. And I feel like I've also, with the minus 8 that I've done, I'm already starting to regret so much of it that I feel like I have more problems to react to. So in an attempt to be proactive, I think I've just caused myself more things to react to in the process. I think in an ideal world, you'd like to be acting somewhat, maybe Matthew's getting at is, you know, acting somewhat reactively because you're so happy with most of your team that you'll just be forced into some sort of moves along the way by whatever happens to your players. And maybe that reactivity in the sense of the way that Matthew's talking about it is a luxury of, you know, doing quite well and having been pretty much on the template and just be looking for those marginal gains to keep, you know, inexorably ticking up the ranks. Now that you've joined me, Tom, at the 800k club, then it's a little bit more, you have to think more about proactive transfers to try and make your way back up, especially if the captaincy thing seems so tied up until AFCON with the Salah. So unfortunately, maybe if we were doing well, Tom, we'd love to be able to just say be reactive, but unfortunately we've got to be proactive to try and find our way up these ranks.
Matthew, are you particularly conscious about how you end up in good positions every time? Is it something that is particularly integral to the way you play? Like, do you pay much thought to the fact that you've got, you know, your 11th, 12th, 13th man is good enough to come on? Like, is it about ownership? Is it about, what is it about?
A bit of that. I mean, I think, you know, when you say proactive or reactive, it kind of feels logically like proactive, you know, is better. You know, it just, you know, sounds like we should be trying to be proactive. But a lot of the time I prefer reactive moves in that, you know, if your squad looks great and, you know, you're thinking, right, I'll be proactive now and change this player who's, you know, doing fine for another player I think is going to do better. I always think that could equally blow up in your face as do well. Whereas, you know, I quite like it. You know, sometimes, some weeks I'm looking at my team and thinking, looks fine. And actually, I wouldn't mind an injury in midweek, you know, because then it sort of makes it obvious which move you should take out. And then it's, you know, it's about who you bring in is the sort of the skill part then, isn't it, I suppose. Whereas, yeah, if your team, you know, looks great and then, you know, you're just like looking for luxury moves, I think you're just as likely to sort of make things worse as better sometimes. I do think I try more to sort of address the weak points in my team so that, you know, your squad as a whole is improving. So kind of, if there's a player who, you know, is very popular, but I don't have him, you know, there might be a point where I'll say, I'll just bring him in because, you know, rather than try and compete on not having that player and hoping another player does it better, I'll sort of, you know, bank that and then look for the marginal gains, as you said, elsewhere. So, you know, trust the rest of my team to sort of do that. So a good example of that is probably this week. So most of the week I was thinking, I'll just save a transfer. As I had Ronaldo, you know, and obviously Lukaku got injured. So I thought, I'll just save a transfer, you know, because I wasn't sure about Vardy. He never seems to score points when I get him. And I wasn't sure between him and Kane, you know, but Kane maybe I didn't need for another couple of weeks. But then I just sort of keep seeing more and more people getting Vardy. Like, it seemed to be that like the whole Lukaku herd was kind of moving into Vardy. And then quite a lot of the Ronaldo herd was also moving to Vardy. So I kind of thought, why risk, you know, Vardy like exploding when I'm doing quite well? Like, why not just plug Vardy in there and like take away that risk? You know, and obviously it didn't pay off, but you know, it's kind of risk management.
Yeah, so it's about covering that downside when you see it.
Yeah,
and just thinking, you know what, you know, all right, I've got a free transfer at the moment, and you know, an injury has occurred. I mean, it's always the enviable position we all want to be in, where we've got the template, or at least like a team that we're pretty settled with. And I mean, that was me, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and in fact, last week, where I was just thinking, yeah, you know, if an injury happens, you know, great, I've got loads of resource to move things around, and I'll probably be able to just captain blah. But then with the Lukaku injury, I think that was what messed up with me. Because if he was fit, I'd probably not be here in this mentality of defeat. I'd probably be feeling a little bit better about my life. Yeah. I'm guessing
I mean, if he'd have been fit, I was absolutely going to just do, you know, bring him in for Ronaldo and probably captain him, to be honest. And, you know, as I was saying to Stag in the break, you know, there's no way Lukaku wouldn't have scored at least a couple of goals against Norwich in that game. So, you know. You know, there's just no way I was not going to have him if he was fit. You know,
I think what was really interesting as well is that you didn't actually jump for Lukaku. Like, I jumped for him a couple of weeks ago against Southampton.
No.
Because I thought, you know what, that was a point to do it. And you decided actually to kind of plough the opposite furrow, where you kind of gave it some patience.
Yeah, because kind of like looking at the point when you want him. It's like with Spurs now, you know, they've got good fixtures in a few weeks, haven't they? But I sort of don't want to, you know, jump on Son now, because what if now Kane scores the next couple of games and then I'll think, I want Kane, but now it's difficult to get him. So I kind of, you know, rather wait until the point when we actually want him and then, you know, see who I want at that point.
This is definitely the luxury of doing so well, though, isn't there? Being up in and ahead that you can wait until the week that you feel like, okay, they've got their ducks in a row and Spurs are starting to fire. Who do I need? And whereas I think, okay, I moved on Lukaku a little bit earlier on the wild card because I was doing well at the time. all those weeks ago.
I haven't used my wild card, but if I had wild card a few weeks ago, I would have got Lukaku in at that point, because you know you don't want to sort of book in transfers of, you know, that you know you're going to want in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
I mean, how important is that to you? Like, do you see booking in transfers as being the ultimate no-no? And I know you've taken a few hits this season, but that's not something I'd associate with you too much. I would not associate taking risks as an accountant as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You're an accountant, right? I'm sure you absolutely are when I was talking. I mean, is taking a hit just pissing away points in your view?
Not always. It depends. You know, if you take a hit and it's, you know, it's a move that you think is going to be good over a few weeks, then yeah, it would probably pay off. I mean, obviously I try not to, and I probably only take a few hits a year, but I think like that maybe I should take a few more hits probably, and maybe this season I am thinking a bit more like that. In fact, I probably should have taken another hit this week. Like I could have, so I brought a Vardy in, which freed up a bit of money. And then, if I was going to make another move, and I did talk about it in my article, it would have been Christensen to Chilwell. Now that would have paid back the points easily. So yeah, it's kind of frustrating. Yeah. It always seems to be, I'm sure you're the same, when you start thinking of taking a hit and then don't, it always seems to be that, should have done.
So my first instinct is always better than my actual outcomes normally. Yeah. Right, and I guess that kind of moves us on nicely to that kind of discussion quickly on the importance of the real fine margins, the very periphery of everything, the margin of the margin, the importance of the 10th man, the 11th man, the 12th man selections, e.g. Livramento. I didn't buy Livramento on my game week 3 World Cup because back then, it felt like a better idea to have Cody. And I think I had Brandon Williams for a while when I had two premiums. And then obviously it was easier to move him up to Cancelo and leave myself with Cody as like my kind of defensive bencher, and that's left me quite exposed actually, because of things like this week where you've got Livramento coming off the bench for loads of people. Obviously the goal is pretty lucky, but nonetheless it's something which with the clean sheets and things that have happened, it leaves me a bit exposed, a sort of a Matthew Pavan nightmares over. And I think an interesting question here is, would we ever advise maintenance transfers? So a few people have said, why don't you own Livramento, dude, on Twitter to me. I'm just thinking, well, would you buy him for Cody and use up a free transfer? Would you buy him as part of -4 or -8? Like, I know there's a mental sort of, hygiene thing about owning him, which I don't at the moment. And maybe that kind of is addressed in my third objective about kind of taking a chance on form, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, Matthew, would you ever advise kind of making maintenance transfers, especially if it's kind of for a -4, -8? I mean, I know you took a free to get Vardy in to cover that downside, but a player like that who's on the periphery, surely you'd be thinking, actually, rolling the free transfer is much better than owning this guy.
I think sometimes there is an argument for doing that sort of move, because I think like every season there's a certain player or players that are just such good value that you kind of just might as well bite the bullet and get them in, because every week that goes by there'll be another transfer that looks more important. It's like, well, just like bringing in a cheap defender that might not play some weeks, but in that, I don't know, are you just better off just taking a hit one week just to get him in, because it'll never be the most important transfer, so you'll just kind of never do it otherwise.
I'm making a transfer to shore up first bench. Like that just seems a bit wild to me.
I like having a decent bench though, because especially the last couple of years with COVID, and I know there hasn't been that much happening with that, but it's always a chance of something, isn't there, of someone it's another factor that of risk that can happen, kind of thing.
Pep being joined by Tuchel and the importance of Chelsea and United, or Chelsea and City, I think is probably the one of the biggest impacts, as much as COVID for sure, when it comes to the need to have like a good deep squad. And I think even just the fact that even at Liverpool, just Jota, for example, is the type of player that a lot of us have owned at some point this season or the previous season. And he has proven to be, fall out of the squad every so often. And I think it's just, there are so many players that have been options for us who, for squad rotation reasons, do occasionally drop out, meaning that, we so frequently need to reach two deep, if not Allen deep, into our benches. I think that's what's changed. And so that your 10th man, your 11th man, and indeed your 12th and 13th even, or men, are very, very important, I feel. This season especially, I've multiple times now gone too deep into my bench. I think, especially if I buy into the Chelsea or City defence more than I have, I suspect I'll need that third option relatively more frequently than I would have otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was saying about if you've got a solid base, then it enables you to take, you're more confident about bringing in, say, Reece James, because if he doesn't play, or unless he comes on for cameo, Livramento sat there, or White, that or Dennis.
I just wonder whether these things are like inversely proportional. Like if price is inversely proportional to ownership, like if the price kind of descends and you kind of get the cheaper players, you want to be buying the most owned players because you want to just be kind of closing that door and any negative thing happening. Like if you're sat there with Brandon Williams and you're watching people who got Livermento at 4 million roll in the points every week, like you kind of think to yourself, well, surely I should have just bought in Livermento when he was the same price or near the same price. Like that probably was worth doing. I think that's definitely something that's worth thinking about, just because I'm kind of, you know, going back to the kind of the main question, just to round off, why are the fine margins important in FPL? Like, I really think the fine margins are about downside protection more than anything else. Like Matthew's spoken about how if you've got the foundation nailed, you can then have a few players to elevate you, the players like Foden that we've mentioned. But it's kind of like an insurance, isn't it? Like, you know, you're just making sure you've got to the potential leaks plugged.
Like covering off the sort of key risks, but and then, you know, what once you've got the risk covering off, looking for those little upsides that you can make, you know, on the crowd. Because it gets to the point where everyone's got basically the same team, you know, there's a few differences. So, you know, those fine margins become more and more important.
It's interesting. I saw the why are fine margins so important in FPL, and I could barely escape that question without thinking of just like Gabriel Jesus, who I brought in this week, takes a shot on goal, it deflects off Foden, and it's a Foden goal all of a sudden. I think it wasn't on target, in fairness. So, you know, we could say that I wouldn't have got anything, and at least I should be happy with my assist. But that was what came to mind. But of course, we're thinking about this in the broader idea of why fine margins are so important. And I think it is, I think, as you say, Matthew, especially as a template starts to form, but we found already a template that has shuffled 3 times, I would say, in, you know, about 9 game weeks. So, you know, it's so easy for us to think that this template is so locked in. AFCON isn't that far away, and that's going to absolutely tear asunder the template, A, but B, it's going to tear apart some squads, especially the Liverpool one. The Liverpool one seems to me like the most vulnerable one. Salah, of course, Mane, of course, they're going to start having to go quite deep into their forward line. Are they going to score enough if they are trying to find goals? Are they going to have to like recalibrate how much they put into, you know, push men forward offensively to try and make up for the lack of talent with more numbers? You know, it's going to really like change the ball game a little bit. And I feel like that and just kind of the knock-on effect it has on a bunch of other squads as well, the AFCON, may kind of give us a good opportunity. All it takes is one Salah injury, for example. I don't wish it to happen, but all it takes is that one moment to happen, and then suddenly the template will change again. And I think, yes, so much of FPL is making sure that you get those small upsides in the little bits that you have beyond the template that you were talking about, Matthew. But then there is also
the phrase
to respond to the template as it changes, you know, just to see what's coming as well as you can, just that little bit more. No,
yeah, that's hard. Yeah, but I think the phrase I would use is sort of a similar phrase, which is marginal gains. You know, obviously similar, but I think that's probably what my whole FPL approach is based on, looking for those marginal gains, which, you know, sounds easy, obviously not as easy in practice. But it seems to become more and more like that because teams are so similar that, you know, that's what you've got to kind of, you know, just manage your team better so you're not having to take risks all the time, covering off the sort of key risk while looking for those little gains you can get here and there at the right times.
I think that rounds it off really nicely, actually. I think from speaking to you here, and obviously Anthony and I bringing our unlearned or unsophisticated view to things, the reality is that the ideal is to be reactive and just be kind of thinking, well, I'm ahead of the pack. I'm just going to be kind of making sure that I'm sorting things out. Whereas for the likes of us, me now, sadly, and Anthony, of course, in the mud too, we're going to have to be looking at ways in which to kind of assault that kind of high castle that you're in. I guess at the moment stability is key, and the importance is keeping those leaks and risks covered by the sounds of it. As you said, you know, fine margins, marginal gains, like they're both synonymous to me. They're both the same thing. And marginal gains is very much a football term. I just wanted to keep it away from that, but I think it's definitely true that the importance of fine margins, the importance of marginal gains is always going to be paramount in FPL. So, as I said at the stop of this bit, it's not really about the actual answer, which is clear. It's more about the journey and the great conversation we just had then, I think, really epitomizes the fact that there's lots of ways in which you can approach this, the way in which you can do things to just improve your FPL fortunes. Maybe things I need to heed going forward. Right, let's take a break there. Move on to correspondence and questions just after this break.
Who got the assist?
Hello, so we're back and we're on to the community section, aka correspondence and questions. And the correspondence returns in its full gusto. Last week we had one kind of starting the pod off and being part of the springboard to the question we're talking about. But this week it's back to where it belongs, isn't it, Anthony?
Yes, it is indeed. The correspondence section is, of course, your chance to get in contact with us in long form with your questions, your thoughts, your poems, your songs, whatever it might be that you've got. And in this week, James Keatley emailed whogottheassist@gmail.com. Now, James Keatley emailing, this is part of a series at this point that he initially emailed two episodes ago, reinforcing that Matt Ritchie is legitimately awful. And Tom had mentioned his phantom good stats, and this eventually linked up to this following question, which, of course, to whogottheassist@gmail.com. Hi, Tom. I suppose the question might be this. At what point should we start to disregard data for certain players who have good underlying data, but who just don't deliver? Do we give 3 to 4 game weeks to deliver on their underlying stats, or do we just jump off them quicker than that? Thanks, James. And I guess, thinking what James is saying here, just to maybe to add a few names beyond Matt Ritchie to this, I'm thinking about someone whose underlying data has been pretty good but hasn't matched necessarily with returns. Maybe Saka's one. Diogo Jota is another. Luke Shaw is another, not so much now but in previous times. Mm-hmm. And sure, we'll even toss in Sadio Mane for this as well, just because he's in my team and I just want to suffer. So what do you think, Matthew?
As I mentioned earlier, I've got my sort of own algorithm. Is probably too fancy a name for it, but it kind of looks at, you know, past, you know, recent stats, fixture, of course. But then the sort of third thing, the third thing that I sort of add in is like player quality, which I kind of just do manually, put in my own rating for that. And, you know, because I think that that's the sort of third angle of the triangle. You could also add nailed on this, which I also factor in as well. But, how they're doing stat-wise, how the fixtures look, but you've got to add in that player quality. So players who, you know, have got great stats, but they're just not that good. You know, they're not going to convert those stats into goals and assists. I suppose Traore's been a classic one this year, and I can't pretend I didn't look at him, because, you know, he's just thought, sure, he's just got to start getting some points. But when you add in that sort of quality angle, you know, you've got to sort of factor that in as well.
I think it's interesting because there's two sorts of players. There's the red herring, the sort of player who's, you know, providing that underlying data, as James kind of detailed, who's doing the job but isn't quite returning the points. And you've got their sibling, which is the overperformer. I'm thinking of bandwagons like Jesse Lingard last year, a player who's performing beyond the data that they're posting. I guess in relation to James's question, Mbeumo comes to mind the most now, because he's probably a red herring that a few people have made the kind of leap on. Good positions, but he just can't seem to finish, can he? And there's that kind of pass to him where he just kind of shot wide, and you're thinking, well, that should probably be in, mate. And I just had a little look at players who are underperforming by 2 goal involvements plus over the last few years, around game week 9 sort of time. And this year, you've got the likes of Mbeumo, Traore, as you mentioned the second ago, Matthew, Trinchao, and Ilian Nusi. Okay, they're all 2.
Yeah.
Last year, you had the likes of McBurney and Trezeguet at 1.97. Yeah, before that, JWP, McGoldrick, Barkley, Che Adams, and Gundogan. Before he was cool, he wasn't cool 2 years years ago. He wasn't at all. And the year before that, Danny Ings, Antonio, Tekkers, Jesus, Salah, and Milivojevic. That season, of course, does actually have a few players who did end up doing okay. So Salah, obviously, that was his 2.59 season, 22 goals, 12 assists that year. Didn't underperform at all. But Ings actually did. So that's not the year that he went on the rampage. That was the year he got injured pretty quickly. 7 goals, 3 assists that year. And Antonio that year was not the monster we know now. So 6 goals, 8 assists, and 120 points or so. So that list of players, Mbeumo, Ilian Nusi, Trinchao, McBurney, McGoldrick, Barkley, Che Adams. I mean, these are players who underperform for a reason It's that they're not pretty good. They're not very good end product stuff, are they?
Exactly.
So you do get players who do burn bright initially. You know, the likes of Mitchell Richards. We've owned him. We owned him that year when he was doing all right in the Prem. And your Pookies. But the reality is that you've got players who, you know, will end up breaking into that sort of thing. I think next week we're going to look at the 200 Club and think about kind of players who aren't performing quite there yet, but will make it there. But it was really striking, I think, to look at the list of names who do underperform on their XGI to that sort of level, and just kind of the content. The identity of those players is pretty instructive, isn't it? There are a lot of red herrings every season, and I think just to answer James's question, 3 to 4 weeks is the perfect amount. I mean, I know that we've got Mbeumo now with a potential injury. We don't know whether he will play this week, and he's not going to play in the League Cup this week. So it is one of those where, you know, it's worth the punt. It really is, because they could turn into a latter day sort of Aaron Ramsey sort of situation. But the reality is that a lot of the time, over the last 4 years at least, these are players who are not going to be burning their names into the annals of FPL managers, legendary status sort of individuals.
And Mbeumo has been very unlucky, hasn't he? I mean, he's hit the post that many times, you know, and that hitting the post is such, again, using the word fine margins or the phrase. You know, you can't say that's being a poor player. It's just being a bit unlucky at that point as well.
I mean, is it though? I mean, it's like, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you.
Yeah, six times.
Fool me six times, shame on everybody around you. You had the year where Luis Suarez like hit the woodwork many times. Remember that that dog leash season where he hit the woodwork so many times. Like, Liverpool were ridiculously underperforming their XG, as we call it now. Back then, we were saying they could have scored loads of goals. Is it the same with Mbeumo though? Is he a player who's got the latent ability to eventually turn that into a parade of goal of points?
Yeah,
I just
know. I mean, obviously he's not. You know, he's not. Not the best player in the world, but you know, but then he's got the other factors. Is, you know, he's got good fixtures now. He has been having good stats. He's cheap, you know. So, you know, I think that, you know, I think he could do okay over the next few weeks still, if he's fit. So yeah, I still think he's a good pick personally.
Like in the case of Mbeumo, it's just like, yeah, he's still just 22, you know, 8 goals in the championship last year wouldn't have necessarily suggested he was the most prolific. And so with that in mind, you kind of just have to, he's in that kind of wait and see category. I think maybe not wait and see in the sense of FPL, because like he does have the underlying data, and I guess just at his price point, he does stick out. And I think there are arguments you can make about a few players who are in around his price point, but at the same time, I still totally see why you have him, Tom, and I wouldn't be selling him, if that makes sense, especially with a few good fixtures coming up for Brentford.
Unless the injury was coming.
The unless was coming in heavy, unless the injury proves to be a particularly big problem. But I guess just rounding us off on James's question, I think it does feel like you should give a player 3 or 4 weeks if you've got them in to, you know, match the underlying data that you've bought them in, presumably for. And like, much as it would be great to avoid bringing them in the first place and just kind of be able to, you know, carefully plot your way through in the way that Matthew seems to be successful at doing most seasons. For myself and Tom, maybe we're trying to work out whether we've managed to buy ourselves another red herring, and that is difficult. 3 or 4 weeks, that's probably as fair as you can do. I think one game's a bit overreactive. 2, 3, I think, are getting towards, you know, what your answer is, and maybe give it the fourth if it just turns out to be that way. Kind of tell you enough. I think that's a fair enough number to go with.
We're all trying to land that Danny Ings, aren't we, that season with Southampton, where everybody thought he was absolutely spent. 6 million, and, you know, 5 game weeks on, you're kind of like, well, actually everyone's jumping on this train now. I think that's kind of what we're looking for in this, in the dregs. When you're thinking, you know, just what, the likes of Matthew are going to be jumping on this guy in 2 or 3 weeks, when there's a couple of weeks you're going to be doing, you know, a completely understandable kind of thinking, well, I need to see more. And if you are taking the punt where we are, basically, you're going to be kind of saying, you know what,
But that's right, how we could, you know, that's how someone like us could gain the 20 points on someone like Matthew right now to gain, you know, to start moving up. We're both about 100 points off where we want to be at this point, Tom. So it's kind of, it is kind of, ooh, there's a quick route to cutting 20% of that problem.
Yeah. Can't captain that guy. Can't captain him. So you've got to be hoping that there's a few explosions along the way. No, I completely get that.
But yeah, anyway, we'll round out this section. And thanks so much for emailing us in, James Keatley. James emailed whogottheassist@gmail.com. If you want to get your questions into this correspondence section, or indeed your thoughts, addendums to this podcast or anything else, just fire it in to whogottheassist@gmail.com. If it's a more complex voice note or something that you might need to get in another way, if you have Tom's WhatsApp, that's always a route. If you have mine, that's even a route too. And other than that, you can send audio files even to whogottheassist@gmail.com, or we might work out some other way. Depending on what that is. So thanks so much, James, for emailing in, and we will move on to the actual Q&A.
Yep, let's move on to the Chelsea defence. Benny Blanco, as usual, pipes up in DM. He asks, I'm not going to do Liverpool accent, I'm not good at it, so I'm not going to do it. Maybe if I had more drinks, I'd do it, but I'm not going to do that. He says, calm down. is Chilwell the clear standout option in the Chelsea defence now? And if you had no fires... So I've got no sympathy for Benny already, because it seems like he's got nothing wrong except to do this. Would moving to him from Azpilicueta be a move worth making? I think maybe we should just think about the Chelsea defence in general here as well. I mean, as I brutally found out this week, Azpilicueta and Christensen owner, there's all kinds of fun you can have in the Chelsea defence, but you've got the Tuchel Tombola to play with. Tuchel Tombola, I should say. Tombola sounds like something that I do every now and again. But I think that this week, you know, Chilwell's positioning was really, really good. But you just don't know how Tuchel's going to pick his team, basically. I think that there's one kind of data point worth picking up here, which is a bit of a weird one, but it's worth noting. I kind of picked up my kind of notes. But if you are somebody who is living the zombie life and you went with Chalonzo, you'd actually be third over in terms of points scored overall for a player. So you've got Salah, you know, way up in first. But if you kind of combine the scores of Chalonzo, they'd actually have 74 points altogether. So you'd have the third highest scoring player in FPL. That's probably not at all viable at all to have done from the start of the season. But it's something that's worth mentioning here. I think overall, I guess I'd be sticking with what you've got a lot of the time, because, you know, this week's genius is next week's foolishness. And I think that could be specifically true if you've got a player, you've got a manager who's going to be rotating like mad, like TT is going to be doing. What do you think here, Matthew? I mean, you've only got Christensen. Are you looking at investing in to Chelsea?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Tuchel or Tuchel, whatever you want to call him, you know, in previous lives, he rotates, especially fullbacks like mad. You know, whoever you get, you're going to expect rotation, but. I think in what Benny's asking there, I think he even says he's got two free transfers, doesn't he? Although you don't put it on the screen, but maybe that was two. You know, I would 100% do that move. Yeah, Aspie again. He's one of them sort of boring players. whereas Chilwell's got such a good high upside. It's just crazy, isn't he? Scored four consecutive Premier League games now.
This is the richest vein of goal scoring form he may ever have in his whole entire career.
Yeah, or Reece James, you know, that he's similar. They're both really going to be really good, but I suppose I just think I probably prefer Chilwell slightly, because Alonso I don't think is that good of a player. So I just think, you know, I know Chilwell had mental health issues early in the season, but that, you know, you just thought once he gets in, he's going to be first choice. And as long as he doesn't start midweek, which I don't think he will, then he should be fine for next weekend. So I just think the upside is much higher with Chilwell than Aspie, personally.
See, this is it. And I think there's an element of team structure here in that if you only had one Chelsea defender and you were looking at getting rid of Azpilicueta and bringing in Chilwell, I'm kind of thinking, maybe stop and try and find another way to get Chilwell into your team, you know, elsewhere and keep Azpilicueta just to like not have this problem where you're kind of perhaps robbing Peter to pay Paul to try and move points around your team. Like the problem with Chelsea is they can play five at the back, they can play four at the back. You've got Alonso or Chilwell, you've got James Chalaba or Azpilicueta, and then in the middle you've got Christensen or Rudiger or Azpilicueta or Silva or Sar or Chalaba. And so you've got this like constant problem. And the one thing about Azpilicueta, and this is something that he shares with Chalaba actually, is that you know he can play in two of these positions. He can play in two of these. And I kind of favor him, just I favor him personally as an option because he seems to be the one that's more nailed, quote unquote, because of that. You know, famously after he just doesn't play a game, it doesn't make sense to say that. But this is why he does seem to offer so much. But the thing is he is, of course, 6.2. And it's like, are you willing to pay that premium when he doesn't have the upside that someone like Chilwell, of course, does offer for cheaper? Like I personally, I have Rudiger at the moment. I would like a second Chelsea defender. And I think that second Chelsea defender, if I now had a choice, given what we've seen in the last few weeks, it would now be Chilwell. But right up until very, very recently, it was Azpilicueta. I think, whilst I think Alonso will get plenty of game time this season, I suspect that, especially in the Premier League, Chilwell is going to get a little bit more of, get the nod like he has been getting in previous weeks. A bit more. I just feel like Chelsea can just, you know, keep giving Alonso plenty of games in the Champions League, for example, at the moment, and let Chilwell just continue tipping away in England. I did actually just briefly consider Mendy, as mad as this might sound. He is 6.1. That makes him more premium than any of all the Chelsea defenders, bar Azpilicueta. He is the top scoring keeper. He has scored the same amount of points as Chelsea's highest scoring defender, which is not any of the goal scoring fullbacks. It's actually Rudiger. He has 7 save points across 4 games this season. He's got bonus points on 3 occasions, albeit just won all those games. So he is kind of an interesting pick in there, and he avoids some of the rotation problem, but we've already seen Kepa play this season. Of course, that wasn't necessarily rotation, but just kind of shows us that, you know, even he isn't necessarily fully safe in this Chelsea side. And so with that in mind, I think for me, I'm not sure if I would do what Benny's move is unless he has like a solid other Chelsea base in there. Yeah. Basically, does he have Rudiger?
I think it also comes back to what I was saying before that, you know, if you've got that, you know, if he's got like a solid squad, that I don't think Chilwell's going to come on a sub that often. He might do occasionally, but so as long as you can afford for them times when he doesn't play, that you've got someone, you know, half decent to cover him, then it kind of, that's what I mean. It allows you to take a slightly bit of a more of a risk because you think, well, I've got Livramento and, you know, he's not bad himself, you know, or Ben White, you know, they're not bad options.
If you're doubling up on Chelsea or even the City defence, realistically, you then need a 14 player squad, you know, at least. And
Yeah. That's definitely what I found this week. I mean, amazingly, I just kind of feel like, the German manager does not care about fantasy football. I mean, that's definitely true. I think that, it's huge unpredictable. But I think there's definitely an element of just pick and stick as far as we can. There's things we can infer. I think probably right about the looking at Chilwell and thinking actually he's probably well suited to the Premier League game. But you know, with all of these players, as I found to my chagrin this week, you've got to every now and again just stomach a downside. As Anthony said, having a 14-man squad becomes a necessity.
But the thing with, like, we've both got Christensen, I think, haven't we?
We have.
But he's like the worst of both worlds because he still gets rotated quite a lot, but then he hasn't got the upside to make it that worthwhile.
It's basically buying the defender. Like, if there was a Man City defender who played as much as Christensen did for Man City, we'd all own him. That is the reasoning that I take here.
Like Stones, when he was last season.
And I know
then he scored as well.
Yeah, he did. But that was like a bonus, wasn't it? That wasn't something we weren't buying Stones thinking, oh, this lad's going to get me a brace and double game week. That was not part of the equation.
Just thought you get clean sheets and it's
a bonus. And at 5 million, that is more than fine. I saw a ridiculous stat actually that he got 38 clean sheets in his last 48 games with Christensen, and he's got a new contract as well recently. Like, I think, I mean, he's good as being your second Chelsea defender if you want to have the money to spend elsewhere. At the time, it made loads of sense, but now, because we are in this sort of context where you've got one premium player like Salah who you have to own, and the rest are questionable, now maybe you'd be looking at just saying,
spin
off Christensen, buy in Chilwell and just go for broke. Right, let's move on to the next question, which is about big at the back. Amazingly. So follows on very, very nicely. Claret FPL, congrats on the newborn. Hope your mum and baby are doing very, very well. Asked where we're at with big at the back going forward, because last week in questions of our friend FPL Jack, we said that, you know, big at the back was good value. The next 3 or 4 weeks are very, very good for Chelsea defenders. We touched on already. But is it a fad or is it something that's going to keep going? Matthew, what do you think? Are you looking to get another Chelsea defender in?
Well, I've got TAA, Cancelo and Christensen at the moment. Obviously, I prefer Chilwell than Christensen now. But I think Livramento is probably so good for his price that it's probably worth having him in one slot. But I think up to four is probably justifiable now, you know, up to four other big ones. You know, between Alexander-Arnold, I think is pretty much a must-have. And then, you know, the other spots probably between Man City / Chelsea. Because you've got players there with get a lot of clean sheets, and there's ones with a lot of upside. So you kind of pick, you know, which end of that spectrum you want to go on, safety or upside. So I think definitely three, if not four, I think is viable now.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that as well with Matthew. I think if you're not going for the four, then, you know, you could be really looking at, as we've talked about in the pod in previous weeks, Ederson as your goalkeeper to kind of maybe maximise making sure you get into that City defence when they get their clean sheet every second game effectively. So yeah, I think where are we at with big at the back, Claret? We are very much advocating for it, I think. I think you'll find a wholesale advocation for it here, because like it's just our advocacy for it, because it is just what we've been talking about with the money sloshing about, and you've said this already, Matthew, that, you know, the money is sloshing about, you can afford to do it. There isn't a massive opportunity cost to it at the moment, because you can probably get most of the midfielders and forwards that you want. And with that in mind, when there's every second week there's a clean sheet coming from City, Chelsea and pretty much Liverpool as well, hard to ignore. It's very hard to ignore.
Yep, I only echo that. So I've got nothing else to add. I think probably big at the back is here to stay for the short term, at least. I'm sure there'll be some medium mid-price midfielder or some sort of, you know, striker will emerge out of nowhere. That means we need to move our money out there. But yeah, at the moment, it does look like the value is going to win out. Let's move on to premium possibilities. So this is quite an interesting one. And I think we touched on it a little while ago in terms of death for the freemium. Andy Penman asked if there's any point in any of the premiums to partner Salah with. Are we going to be looking at, you know, the likes of Lukaku, obviously who's injured now, Ronaldo, whatever. Like, where do we even go with all this money that we're saying sloshing around? Rubster asked if Kaku in early was a bad decision. I think we've kind of discussed that earlier on. But it's still worth kind of meditating on here, because he asked, you know, because all the premiums done nothing, should we have moved to Vardy instead? This season is very strange, he acutely kind of adds. And also, Emma at Jump the Wave DM me earlier on to point out that Kane and Son were on everyone's radar. We've mentioned both of them actually today, before that narrow defeat against West Ham, where I haven't seen them mentioned too much over the last couple of days. I mean, in terms of the premiums, guys, I mean, I guess it has definitely become one of those places where we are in watch and wait mode to see who kind of emerges. Vardy obviously was in ridiculous form. Matthew, you and I both brought him in. If he is injured, I don't know what we're going to do about that. I mean, how do you see the premium sort of situation developing from here?
Well, as we've kind of been talking about, you know, there only being one premium that you need, so, you know, spending that money around. But I'm always a bit reluctant to do that in practice, because you just know, you know, the minute say Kane, you know, scores a few goals in the next couple, then he's got good fixtures, you know that you're going to want Kane in, and then that's 12 million, and you think, well, I've just spread all that money around, I can't get him in anymore. Or Lukaku comes back, starts banging them in. You know, you're never more than a game week or two away from wanting one of those backs. So I think it's, you know, I'm always wary of like spreading the money out too much. Regardless of that it seems sensible, you know, right now.
So do you find yourself just trying to concentrate in a player, or do you just find yourself holding a big bank balance?
Probably a big bank balance, to be honest. Like, you know, because then I'll think, well, you know, what are the value, you know, what typical, are the good value players?
Typical accountant. That's the thing. The accountant's skill is going to come in. Like, you want to be, there for the flexibility. Then you can swoop when the investment kind of criteria pops.
I say Vardy's out this weekend. I don't know whether he will be, but let's pretend he is. I'd probably say, well, I've been kind of like wanting to get Tony because I think he's good value all season. So I then just get Tony, you know, and then, you know, you got a load of money in, but then, you know, maybe then you do want someone else. You know, you can choose who you want to sort of trade in for them. You know, could get, you know, trade Dennis in or Antonio, you know, if he gets injured again. So yeah, there's arguments for that, but there's also arguments for, you know, getting the points here and now, you know, with a big player.
Oh, I agree. I do think that the jury's out here. I think that if Vardy had continued his goal scoring form, at least not gotten injured, then we'd all be sat here kind of thinking, well, you know what, Vardy's got Arsenal next, who he scores against pretty much every time. He always scores against us. And then he's got Leeds, so he's worth keeping hold of. And then you'd be thinking what you said earlier on, Matthew, about kind of just keeping those either that money either spread around or keeping that money either in the bank. It's very kind of outcome dependent, I guess, when it comes to that. And it's kind of like you're living hand to mouth in some ways, because you've got all this money kind of sloshing around. So you can do whatever you want in a lot of ways, which you spoke about earlier on in the fine margin sort of section. I guess Kane and Son will, from game week kind of after the international break, that's for sure, come onto everyone's radar, because of that Leeds game from the start. If obviously the players are still looking a little bit dodgy, that's going to be kind of high on everybody's sort of list. But I mean, they've got Leeds, Burnley, Brentford, Norwich between game week 12 and game week 15. Three or four of them are home. So you'd be looking at that and thinking there's fixtures. But equally, as Anthony said earlier, you know, under Nuno, it's not really quite come together yet. I think that's definitely true as well from what you read in The Athletic about, you know, the likes of Jack Pittsbrook talking about how there's a lack of fluency right now. It definitely feels like we're in a bit of a transitional period. As Rubes said earlier, the season's kind of strange. And I think that we're definitely in the case where maybe having that money in the bank, like you'd be advocating, just ready to go to the next investment, which is looking like it's a bit of a goer, could be a good way of looking at it. I mean, Anthony, what do you reckon to all this?
See, I'm coming at this from a slightly compromised position in that, I guess, when faced with this question a little bit, did I have the cojones to keep money in the bank? The answer was no, and I put it into Mane instead, hoping to kind of, you know, get the points and put it on the big player. So with take maybe what I'm saying here with a pinch of salt, or maybe with just maybe I'll just sound like sour grapes when I'm saying that, yeah, this season has been strange. But if there is there a point in premiums to partner Salah? It didn't feel like it this weekend. It really didn't.
Well, that was unlucky to be fair with Manny. No one saw that.
Yeah, and it is a bit like what people maybe have said about the Havertz thing, is that, you know, if he had played, you'd have expected him to probably get something in that game. But that's not the way it worked out in the end, unfortunately. So is there any point in a premium to partner Salah? It doesn't feel like it right now. But as Matthew was getting at, really, you know, it never seems far away that the next one will be there again.
Flexibility is key, I guess, in a lot of ways. Like, as Matthew said earlier on, it's all about kind of being able to move to remove those sort of risks to your rank overall in an FPL sense. And mm-hmm. I think that that probably is something that permeates how we deal with the premiums for now. I do think that Kane and Son from Game Week 12 is going to be okay. But as Emma said, the team looks a bit lackluster. I'd be sharing anybody who doesn't own them skepticism about jumping on the likes of Son and Kane right now. Right, let's move on to the final bit this week. Totally elfed off. You'll see why I said this in a second. but basically, our friend, FPL Elf, our mate Dave, said, how do you avoid going on tilt after a disastrous game week? Wow, hello, mate. Welcome to the club, the sinking ship club. The Titanic is sinking. We're moving deck chairs around. We're playing our bloody harmonicas. But no, we're definitely not getting on those escape boats, are we? But he said it's so easy to want to immediately look to a differential punt to help call that lost ground. You know, what do we do? FPL Pricey Sam, he actually had a really good game week. He got 104 points this week. But he says, you know, how do we stay neutral/balanced in our views after such a volatile game week in order to prevent outcome bias? Could you reference that? You know what you're talking about? Creeping into our thoughts by overly relying on the results on a particular week. Outcome bias is obviously the idea that you take the outcome to judge how good the thought process was. I replied to Plonker about this earlier. In terms of the kind of the psychological side of it, I suppose. But yeah, the reality is that FPL doesn't care about you. Social media doesn't care about you. You care about you. So if you had a bad week, you know, just have the moments yourself. I'm really, really, as I said earlier on, rarely emotionally affected by FPL. But as you can tell by tonight's pod, I've been really messed up by this week. And it's a little bit difficult. But uniquely for me, I need to do a podcast. And I guess it's actually fairly therapeutic because now I feel a lot better. And a few people would say, you know, if there was an option to not do the pod tonight, would you kind of just say, nah, don't do it? But I don't think I've done that, to be honest. I think I'd have been on here regardless. I think it's probably the same for you, Anthony, as well, after that game week kind of free disaster. Because it's kind of integral to the process now for us, isn't it? Just to kind of come on, talk about it. And you kind of get out of the system for doing this.
Yeah, and I think it kind of sets you up for the next week too. I don't think, if I had been well enough to be on the podcast last week, I don't think there's a world where I got Jesus and Nani. Genuinely, it's funny.
It's my brilliant advice though, Anthony. That's the reality.
That's it. Yeah, it's my company that's kept you on here this evening. Yeah, look, when you have a tough game week, it's unfortunate. You just have to suck it up. And yeah, being involved in a podcast means that you've got this kind of unique way of long couching your way through it a little bit. But how do you stop yourself going for a differential? You just don't do it. Just don't do the punt. Don't do the silly thing. Don't dig the hole any deeper than it is. But that's really easy to say. Like, I actually found that after the game week 3 catastrophe, if I remember correctly, I decided to do no transfer. I did not carry through my plan, and I ended up having a bad game week 4 as a consequence. But I was like, I just tried to just stop myself tinkering and actually burnt myself even further. Like, I just think I was like, my fingers got burnt, and then I ended up just sticking my palm down onto the grill and onto as well. It didn't really help at all. So like, me here with one hand and one burnt, metaphorically, I'm not sure if I'm in the best position to say. It's very tough. It is just really tough, and you just have to distance yourself from FPL to stop yourself getting tilted by it. Matthew, have you ever had a bad week?
Yeah, my loads of bad weeks. Yeah. So, sort of a few things come to mind looking at this question. So, the first one is, you know, because I've seen a few comments this week about, you know, FPL, you know, negatively affecting people's mental health and things like that. I think the first thing to always remember is it's just a game at the end of the day. You know, it doesn't really matter if you have a bad game week, it's just a game. You know, I think, you know, sometimes I think people, you know, get so negatively impacted in it. You know, maybe find another hobby, honestly. You know, we've had in our family sort of you know, actual health issues, you know, the last few years. I know, Tom, you've in the past had your own health issues, and I think things like that make you just see that you know, there's more important things in life to worry about in life than FPL at the end of the day. So that's the first thing I say. In terms of, but then, you know, going on tilt and being, is you just need to, like, you know, to use an economics term, it, you know, what's happened this week is a sunk cost. that's happened. You've just got to forget about it and just look at your team objectively. How does it look now? You know, so for example, you've got Havertz. There's no point, you know, raging him out, because you look at him, he's still got two good fixtures coming out. All right, if he now gets benched, you know, maybe the week after you take him out, but you know, he could still get a lot of points the next couple of weeks. And just, yeah, just try and forget what's happened. Forget that you've, you know, especially getting the wrong captaincy, because that actually means you've still got that, you know, you've got Salah, you just for some reason didn't captain him, you know, so that whether you're captain or not, it's nothing to do, got nothing to do with this week, you know, because you can now captain him or not, kind of thing. So yeah, just look at it objectively and try and forget what's just happened, which I know is easier said than done, like a lot of these things, but
I want you to
we're all human.
Can you be my dad and just tell me these things? My dad was like, just go away, that you're an idiot.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree with you. I think it's one of those things where obviously the more distance you put between yourself and the event, things get better. And as I said to my girlfriend today, my girlfriend was like, just stop playing effing FPL if this is making you feel this way. And I was just like, I'll be fine tomorrow. It's just one of those things where you've got a little bit of a reaction to it. And to be honest, like most weeks, I've got no reaction whatsoever. Like, you know, I'll laugh it off. It'll be fine. I'll get to that point where I just laugh at the variance. It's just because of how, you know, brutal this week was that it can definitely kind of be one of those where you're kind of just like, oh, really? I think it's just because the difference in you and me, Matthew, is that, you know, you won't make that kind of gamble, and it's definitely something which has served you really well. For me, it probably used to serve me very well. But, you know, likes of me, likes of the people like Late Riser as well, like that kind of chasing the dragon sort of thing is kind of the reality of how we play this game. And over the last few years, it's just not worked for me.
We have that, like, tips of the week, don't we, on Twitter. And mine this week was overthink.
Mine was don't make moves. You know,
yeah, doing nothing is okay. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, that was before the Lukaku injury, and I guess, you know, if you are kind of having a bad time, the reality is, like, you know, Twitter doesn't care about you, frankly, or socials don't care about you, your group chat doesn't care about you on WhatsApp if that's kind of how your environment. So I think that
you might be better off not looking at Twitter, but again, exactly, I know that's exactly difficult because it, like, something draws, you know, it's like, I don't know, masochism.
It's almost like these social media platforms are made to addict us.
Yeah, it's emotional vampirism, isn't it? But the reality is, yeah, it's masochism. The best things to do, as we've all said, is don't make any rash transfers, don't make any rash moves, take time, take a breath, let yourself calm down, absorb it, stay off socials. You're going to see everything through the prism of failure and frustration.
Yeah, and you'll see all 100 point game weeks.
Yeah, exactly. In your case, it's fine. I think no one else is going to be able to see it through the prism of failure that you will. But the reality is that it's just FPL. You need to get over it. You will get over it, but I mean, there are some game weeks, other game weeks, where it is a little bit annoying, just to say the least. But I mean, the reality is that, yeah, you got to just kind of stick with the plan, stick with your process, stick with whatever. We all get them, and we've all kind of been asked questions about why, you know, I haven't done too well this week, and you know, people will say, "This is my team. What do you think about my team?" Well, your team could have scored very, very well if we quit and reloaded the save and Football Manager.
Yeah,
that's pretty much my team this week. Right, let's move on to the transfers and captains. Matthew, you already mentioned earlier on that you're looking at getting Tony in. Obviously, there's a lot of kind of questions surrounding players this week. You've got Rafinha, you've got Vardy, and like me, you've got Dennis for bench because he's suspended this week. I mean, how are you looking in terms of what you're doing this week?
Well, like normally at this point, I'll have, you know, a fairly good idea what I'm thinking of doing. But this week, because obviously there's, you know, there's a few doubts in my team there. So Rafinha, you know, I think he'll probably be out, but we don't know. Vardy, I'd say he'll probably be okay, but again, we don't know. Dennis is definitely out, and then I've got the likes of Benrahma, who's looking a bit stale. Saar getting a bit that way as well. So I've got Oh, and Christensen, you know, he seems to be the worst Chelsea defenders have. So I've kind of got a few moves that I'm thinking about, and I honestly don't know which way I'm going. So I've got if Vardy's out, they're kind of all ifs and, you know, what ifs kind of thing. So if Vardy's out, I'll probably do him to Tony. I think that would probably be fairly straightforward. If Vardy may be okay, but Rafinha was definitely out, then I would maybe take him out. And then for him, I've got like three different options that I'm thinking of. So Mbeumo, again, if he's fit, I know we talked about him earlier, possibly Emile Smith-Rowe as an alternative in a similar price bracket. Good value. Seems to get his shooting boots a bit more. And or Diego Jota, who's another one of those folding type of high upside with some risks. But again, I think my squad can probably just about take that, possibly. But yeah, another one I'm thinking of is Christensen out for Chilwell. That would probably be if Vardy and Rafinha are both okay. Tempted to do that for a hit, possibly, but I don't know whether I would in practice. Or the final one I've got is possibly, again, if most people are okay, I could take out Dennis, who, you know, just got me 12 points on my bench, but I could either get Tony or Huang for him. So Huang's more of a like-for-like type of thing, and Tony's a bit more, but I do quite want to get a Brentford attacker in.
Fair play.
So I don't know.
No, I think it's fine on a Monday night to not know.
And in the always Captain Salah Brigade, yeah?
Yeah, I'm, again, not going to overthink that one.
Understandable. So like you, I'll be captaining Salah in my own team. Now, a bit like you, I have a little bit of a wait and see, and that I am going to wait and see what's going on with Rafinha.
Even if there's a chance that, you know, they said, you know, it's a late assessment, you're not going to get rid of him, are you?
This is it, yeah. It's a Sunday fixture as well, and obviously, as we say, it's away to Norwich. It just means you'll give him every last chance you can, especially, thankfully, it's a Saturday deadline. If it isn't Rafinha who goes, goodness, what do I do? Like, I did keep 2.5 million in my bank. It's not enough for me to upgrade any of my non-premium defenders, so those being White, Cody, or Livramento, to Alexander-Arnold, who's now 7.6. So I'm kind of, if I want to get Alexander-Arnold in, it's a multi-week process or something that requires a hit. So I think it's going to be someone in the midfield who would make way, if it wasn't Rafinha, probably to get in Foden. That's where I'm kind of feeling right now. Now, the people who'd be on the chopping block, Rafinha, aforementioned, Mane, who I've obviously just brought in, but I'm just annoyed with, or Bukayo Saka, who, much as I love him as a player, and much as he is a brilliant player, and much as he seems to continue to get the underlying numbers, he's just not doing it. And he's had three game weeks now in my side. They've been pockmarked with all shades of disappointment. So I'm kind of tempted. Do I give him one last week away to Leicester? It'd be kind of typical in the slightly more difficult fixture. He finds himself scoring. It would be rather typical. But I'm not sure. He is the one most tempted to go. I'm going to continue faith anyway for another week in that forward line of Tony, Jesus and Antonio. I'll start them in a 3-4-3 purely because they have all got good fixtures. I got Jesus in for... not just for Christmas, fits with him more than most. So he's sticking around for at least another game week with that Palace game at home. But I would love to be doubled or tripled up actually on City in the case of having Cancelo as well. But goodness knows if he'll even play. Captain Salah, not going to overcomplicate it. There is no point overcomplicating it.
Taking Mane out is one of those ones, like difficult transfers, like I was talking about earlier, where, you know, especially now he's had a rest, you know, he's unlikely to get that could blow in your face every day of the week, couldn't it?
It could, yeah. The thing is that Mane is one of those players who conceivably he could be the highest scoring player in the game week next week. You know, like there aren't many people you'll sell that could do that to you. Really terrifying.
Yeah, it's tricky.
I'll have a whole week of thinking about it, basically.
Regardless, much like Pontius Pilate, you'll be hoping to see Jesus at the end of the cross. Anyway, let's move on to my team, which is a pilot.
Rising again 3 minutes later and heading in another one.
So I've got Mbeumo, I've got Vardy, I've got Rafinha, who are all injured. I'm not really sure. Obviously, I'll keep Rafinha until the very end and I'll play him if it's all right. I really like to roll it this week for obvious reasons, just because I think, but also I hear what Anthony was saying, and I had noted here actually that after a bad game week four, he just thought, you know, screw it, I'm going to leave it and carry it through. Like, if there are kind of things to change, I'm not going to be shy about changing them. And I didn't think Ben Rahm was really against Everton. He was not as good over the last game against Spurs, so maybe he could be the one to be looking at removing. I mean, there's loads of information I need, effectively. I mean, this week was going to be the week where I got rid of Guaitar. I think I'm going to basically just have another two-pointer off him and just be done with it. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, Christensen, Aspilicueta, my Chelsea defenders are probably going to be playing this week at Newcastle. It is what it is. Cancelo, Trent, yeah, fine. In midfield, Ben Rahm, as I said, away against Aston Villa, I think that his race is run in FPL terms, but he could be doing it. In Bremo,
the race should never have started. Anathema that we ever got to this point, but anyway.
I know, it's very silly.
Have you got any money in the bank, Sam?
I've got like 0.3. I mean, I upgraded Trossard to Havertz. I think Havertz this week again is a decent option. Like,
I was just wondering whether you were tempted to get in one of the more exciting Chelsea defenders, but
Christensen would
be the one, I suppose. But
I think it's one of them, isn't it? Where if Vardy has to go, so I've got Vardy, Antonio, I've got Dennis, who's on the bench, who's suspended this week, but whatever. I think he's going to stay there. If Vardy has to go, then I'll remove him probably for Iheanacho, to be honest, because from game 12 onwards, they've got a very nice run. And so maybe that would be Christensen to Chilwell or something like that. It's all dependent at this point. I can't give any kind of recommendation about what I'm going to be doing. There's no solidity about what I'm going to be doing. So there we go. To be honest, I just want to kind of have a few days away from FPL. I'll come back to it on Thursday or Friday, full of gusto. But for now, it's just one of those where I'm just like, I don't want to be touching this anymore. That probably is it, isn't it, Anthony?
It is, yeah. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening and watching. If you were on the YouTube, we were Who Got the Assist. Please leave us a 5-star review if you liked what you heard. And if you do want to see us on YouTube rather than hearing us in your ears on whatever podcast app you do listen to us on, then go to YouTube and search Who Got the Assist, or WGTA for that matter, and you will find the unedited videos of the pod there. If you would like to join the mini league, then 2IP43T is the code that you'll need. Thanks so much for coming on, Matthew. It's an absolute pleasure, and good to have somebody with a measured head and plenty of FPL experience to guide myself and Tom through this in a week where I think both of us had very itchy fingers.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, guys.
Thank you very much for coming on, Matthew. I think your visit to us was very well timed in terms of just providing that sort of paternal guidance towards what we probably need to be doing. Like, you know what, guys, you're both a bit rubbish, but no, this is probably better for you if you do that.
Yeah.
good at data analysis, but maybe actually playing the game, given how you've been doing, this is what you need to be doing. Anyway, we hope this is to think about the fine margins in FPL and think about all these other things which are currently affecting the game. We'll be back next week. Probably talk about 200 Club Stag, finally get that podcast that we meant to do last week in next week with Mo Salah above the 100 point mark. But nonetheless, hope to see you. I'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.